Welcome to The Common Sense Show with your host, Dave Hodges. We discuss a variety of topics here, including the deep state, the new world order, Agenda 21. There is no one, no topic beyond Dave's reach, because as you know, you can't dodge the Hodge.
Hey everybody, Dave Hodges here, host of the Common Sense Show. Glad that you could join us. We have a really in-depth investigative report coming. We're going to be talking about the federal government, and we're going to be talking about pandemic expectations, things you can count on, not count on, and we're going to try to remove some of the mystery because right now there's too many rumors, too much exaggeration going on, and not enough facts, and we're going to try to stick to the facts, and I've got someone we call Wrecker, who's a senior federal law enforcement person and who has some, let's put it this way, some connections to the things that we're talking about. He'll have some knowledge and we're going to prevail upon that knowledge. Before we get started, there are some people that keep the lights on for us. And I had a bad revelation when I, today, Paul Martin called me today and told me the head of MPS, and that's the storable food company we work with, went on Alex Jones and said he could be out of food in 2 weeks because the federal government's consigning a lot of it. They're using their federal authority to go to the front of the line. And they did this with Bob Griswold in his night vision, and we talked about that. I don't know what the situation is in detail. I have someone who handles my ads for me on our YouTube channel, and he's looking into this, and we're going to try to get the gentleman on our show as a guest. But I'm telling you right now, whatever you're doing prepping-wise, you better do it fast, and you better do it now. Because if the government wants something, they're going to take it. So go to preparewithdave.com, 47% off the two-week emergency kit, and we're selling it low volume because we can keep the price down, and we're interested in getting people started. 2 weeks is better than nothing, and some people have bought as many as 20, 25, 30 because the price is so low. But I don't know how much longer we're going to have this. We're also brought to you by waterwithdave.com. Same deal. Same company, same manufacturer. Water filtration, the best there is. If you go to waterwithdave.com, you'll see all the research. And you'll see this is not anecdotal testimony stuff. This is actual scientific research that shows you how good this device is. And this will save lives. So we got water, we got food. Preparewithdave.com, waterwithdave.com. That's who's keeping the lights on. I don't know how much longer I'm going to be representing them based on what I'm hearing, because if this pandemic goes really, really hot, what you have is what you've got, and who knows what those circumstances are going to be. But that's why we have our guest Wrecker on. Wrecker, thank you for joining us. And I don't know really what to expect, except I had something leaked to me about potential martial law procedures, but they were pretty general, so I don't think there were any major revelations in there. So how bad do you think this is, and how far will the government go to take control of the situation?
Well, good evening, Dave, and thanks for having me back on.
Glad to have you.
Well, martial law is always a hot topic, isn't it, Dave? You know, the thing about martial law is that the states are going to call for it first, and then if it gets really bad, the president can call for a national state of emergency. And that opens all kinds of doors. But most of the time, it's going to be handled at the state level, vis-a-vis the governor, his National Guard, and then the state police, local police, sheriffs, all that. I don't know how bad it could get right now because of the coronavirus. And, you know, let's go ahead and hit that one. Mike Adams and a couple other guys are putting out some really good numbers on the coronavirus. I don't know where it's at in the country, but I know there's a hell of a lot more cases than what is being reported. I recently just traveled from one state back to my home state. I'm not going into states of where I live, but the state that I had to go and visit for the government's business, I just found out that the town next to where I had to go had two cases of coronavirus. and people are being quarantined. And so these are, you know, these things are starting to pop up all over the place. And, you know, now that we found out this 10-year-old boy is what they call the super carrier, you have potentially, the way I think of it, if you have one, you have 10. You know what I mean?
Sure.
If you got one person that can be a super carrier, you might as well say you got 10.
Let me interrupt you for a second. How do you define a super carrier?
Well, that would be a person that can carry the disease and not be killed by the disease. There's some people, years ago when we were getting briefings about Ebola, that were able to carry the virus, pass it, and yet not die from it.
Mm-hmm.
So that means that a person who traveled recently to China could have actually got the coronavirus, flown back home before any of this ever got into the news, before there was ever any lockdown, and carried on their day-by-day life. Now, if you go by just what I said, you could cause a lot of panic.
Sure.
Because you could say, well, my gosh, that could be one person, it could be 10. If it's 10, it could be 30. You know, here's the interesting thing, is still the incubation rate. Is that between 1 and, let's say, 2 weeks, let's really drag it out to 2 weeks, before you get the symptoms and drop dead, you can still pass this. So that in itself is what, that's what I find to be a very scary thing, because let's just pick a major metropolis, New York City. Let's say downtown New York City, someone walking down the street drops dead, confirmed coronavirus. Well, how many people did that person just come in contact with? How many people did those people come in contact with? Immediately, you have to quarantine the area.
Sure.
And, you know, that's when you start talking about martial law, because as we're seeing what's going on in China, they drug their feet on this for so long, and they didn't enact any of the proper procedures for quarantine, they allowed it to spread. If they would have just clamped down on one area, I apologize to anyone stuck in this area, but this is what we got. You know, we're here, we're handling it. These are the emergency number services or your Red Cross or your local government's affiliates to reach out to, but everything is shut down right now. That would be the best case scenario for a quote unquote martial law of a block or two. But that's not the way it's going to go. That's not the way it's going to go, because that's not the way people act. That's not the way people travel. You know, when people travel, they don't just typically go from the store back to the home. They go from the store to the mall, then they go to the gym, which, my God, the worst place to catch germs or, you know, any type of flu symptom or anything like that. It's always passing the gyms are the worst about it. And I'm a gym rat, so I know. I frequent the gym all the time. But I guess in regards to martial law, if it happened in a big metropolis city, and there's already military plans out there for this, I think they would lock down an entire city based off of what they've seen already in China and not allow anyone in or anyone out.
Mm-hmm. Well, I tend to agree with you. How will they lock it down? What would be the mechanisms of control?
Well, you can do a simple vehicle checkpoint, what we call VCPs, which can be done by your local municipality police and state police and sheriff's departments. You can shut down the main avenues of approach into a city, the interstates, the highways. It's then stopping the farm roads and the suburban roads, linking cities between the suburbs, which typically gets hard. But you can only stop so much traffic. And this is what China found out. You can only stop vehicle traffic. You can't stop bicycle traffic. And you can't stop foot traffic. If people want to get out and move, they will swim across the river to move. So there, in my mind, in my experience of being in this world, you cannot completely clamp down on a city unless you put a man every 5 meters from another man in a circle around the city. And that's for 24 hours a day, nonstop. I don't think anyone has the resources to do that in any city, anywhere. I mean, imagine Chicago. Let's say worst case scenario, the war zone battle of Chicago that it is every day, introduce the coronavirus, plus the excessive amounts of gang violence. You're risking a lot of lives to stand there to make sure people ain't going in and out. And then you're going to have a lot of crimes of opportunity happening at the same time, which will require even more first responders to be there. That's a lot of resources to have to pool from areas. I guess you could say one of my concerns is, let's say there is a lockdown of a city, and you pull all the resources because, in the government, we have what I call Operation Knee-Jerk Reaction. We wait till the very last minute, and then we do everything on the checkbook at one time. You'll have so many moving parts, it's hard to coordinate all the agencies and points of contact. And the liaison officers are just running back and forth trying to pass scuttlebutt. And then we have another incident happen 20 miles away. And no one very rarely hears about it. And then that incident spreads. So it's hard to plan anything like martial law. It's easier to shut down the border than it is to contain one city. From California to Texas, it's easier to shut that border down than it is to contain one city. Just how big is Phoenix?
4 million people.
Yeah. Yeah, you're not going to stop everybody if they want out. Here's the thing about that, is you can only put martial law down as long as you can enforce it. If people want out, they will get out. If you're in their way, something's going to happen. People will clash with police in a frantic panic if they believe their lives are at risk. And that just, it's just my point of view. But when it comes down to that, the first responders that will be there will only be there until it gets too damn bad. Because it's your job. You're a first responder. You're supposed to be there. You're going to help with the quarantines. You're going to help with cordoning off areas. You're going to help with vehicle checkpoints. You're going to help with litter and aid stations. You're going to be tasked with escorting high-ranking executives in and out of areas so that they can go from one meeting to another and check on this operation and that operation. And once bullets start flying and people start throwing bricks at you and Molotov cocktails, and you have the mini protests and then the mini riots, and then they start attacking police officers, eventually then the military comes in. Once the law enforcement has to be augmented by military, whatever hopes and dreams there were of containing something just got even worse. And the reason why I say that is there are a lot of guys that I've been listening to lately who said the military is trained for this. They're trained to cordon off an area and to quarantine a place, and no, they're not. Maybe the military police. But your regular National Guard, they're not exactly trained up to specs. A riot team from a police officer standpoint is 20 times more trained than the National Guard will ever be. Because the National Guard doesn't meet up every day and doesn't do that job every day. Nor are they introduced into that world every day. And I've sat there when Ferguson, Missouri happened, and the National Guard showed up, and they're out there. They have their MRAPs. They have their helmets on. They got their ballistic plate carriers on. And they have no magazines in their weapons. And I could, if I could show it, I could show you footage that the FBI got of officers in Ferguson looking at a crowd of protesters, turning his back to look at another side of the crowd of protesters, and about five or six guys pulling their guns from the appendix position in the front of their pants, pointing it straight at an officer, maybe 5 meters away from them. And when the guy turns back, they all put their guns back.
What was the point of doing that?
To me, it's the evolution in the way people respond to situations now. America is a boiling pot. You have certain cities, like let's take Ferguson, Missouri, for example, a complete lie, and they were willing to tear down the entire city over a lie, over the fact that one guy got shot for being a criminal and attacking a police officer, and then a lie was spread, and they tore that town down, and then that spread to almost every state and every major city, and it lasted for 2 or 3 years with those protests, which turned violent to riots. Imagine the coronavirus where people are actually dying like in China. Have you seen these videos?
I'm
watching video after video of normal, ordinary people walking down the road, collapsing face first, dead. Or convulsing like if they're an extra on Exorcist and a gurney, and people are just walking by terrified looking at this in the hospital, or you know, the dead bodies littering the hospital. Imagine when reality gets introduced. What happened in Ferguson was based off of false accusations. Imagine when reality hits. When people are actually dying, they will lose their mind. Here's my issue. And you want me to tell you what my biggest fear is?
What would that be?
My biggest fear are the things that we try to prepare for, but we have plans and preparations and we practice them, and you're never really prepared when terrorism strikes. Otherwise, we would always be there. The worst case scenario, let's take New York for example. New York City gets hit with the coronavirus. People are, you know, they're, I don't know if you've been to New York, but they're packed on packed.
Yeah, I've been there.
Yeah, I mean, it's a madhouse at times, especially during rush hour. I imagine Brooklyn with millions of people walking around and dead bodies littering the street because you don't have people, you know, people are afraid to go near these bodies to pick them up from the hazmat teams. You know, you got cops dealing with this, fire dealing with that, people littering the streets. Get that happening for a week or two. A lot of chaos, a lot of commotion. And that's when you have the crimes of opportunity or the terroristic attacks of opportunity. If you were a bad guy, and I'm giving out a hypothetical. I'm not saying anyone go and do what I'm about to say. I'm just telling you that these are things that we have to prepare for. And if I'm telling you to prepare for them, it would behoove of you to understand why I'm saying it. If I was a bad guy and I want to take complete advantage of a situation, I would take me and my bad guy friends when a city the size of New York has lost all continuity and the police aren't out there doing their job anymore. I'd go take over the water treatment plant. I'd go take over one of the major hubs that has all the electricity. You know why?
Why is that?
Because then I can control the heartbeat of the city. If me and 20 of my friends can take over one area that controls all the water, I can say, hey, you know, I may or may not just have a couple of these infected bodies here I could dump into the treatment center for the water. You need to negotiate with me.
Mm-hmm.
You could hold an entire city hostage. And these are scenarios that get introduced to the government that we have to think about and we have to plan for. And that's why there's always gates and fences and alarms and cameras and security guards and extra law enforcement roving around the area. And that's all fine and dandy until it gets too bad for you to go out and do your job anymore. Then what happens to those areas? Because if an EMP doesn't happen, or if the critical infrastructure isn't taken down, or we're not nuked, then everything is still working. Traffic can still be moving. Businesses can still be open. The water is still running. The lights are still on. But what happens when a bioweapon hits and no one comes to the New York Stock Exchange anymore?
How long do you think first responders will stay on the job? Probably a better question would be what conditions would lead them to leave, but you know, I think it's also a time sensitive question too.
Yeah, it's going to be time sensitive. Well, you got to look at what you're working with. So let's go ahead and hit this one on the head. The M95 masks, do not waste your time with that. If you want to buy them, you know, if people want to buy them because it gives them, you know, a warm and fuzzy that you're stopping minor air particulates, sure, go ahead. Just know that they're going to last an hour. Give yourself an hour. So if you do wear something like that and you do go out in the public, keep like freaking 10 of them on you. Because you may go to put one on, hey, it's an hour, or, you know, it's 58 minutes, time to change over, and I put my only spare on, and bam, the rubber band that holds it together snaps off. What do? You know, make sure you have spares of everything. One is two, two is three, you know. Always make sure you have more than just one of something. Never carry one knife, carry two. Never carry one lighter, carry two. If one breaks, at least you got a spare. If you got one mask, at least you got a spare. But those masks are only going to last for so long, and people are going to start realizing that in China right now, people are actually taking water jugs, like what you see at the office, and are cutting the bottoms of it out and putting it over their heads. It looks a little funny, but in theory, if you don't have anything, you make what you got to make whatever you can, you know, so that you don't get the infection, because it can be passed through the eyes, through the particulates, through sneezing and coughing. So what does the government have? Or what do your first responders have? Not all police and not all sheriff's deputies have gas masks. But everybody in the government's got a gas mask, at least law enforcement-wise, or at least they better, because it's issued to you. And normally you have two or three canisters with you. Well, here's the way that works. Your mask will protect you from nuclear, biological, chemical, and radiological elements. Depending on the humidity, or if it's foggy, or if it's raining, those masks then have a timestamp on them. If you're just walking through the open air markets or standing out, you know, at a cordon area on the side of a highway, that filter could potentially last up to a week. If it rains, that filter may last 3 hours. So how many filters do they have on them? Typically, you have one on the mask, and your gas mask pouch has a side pouch or a spare canister. So typically, law enforcement will have two canisters. So depending on what's going on, that's how long you got. If you don't have any spares, you sure as hell shouldn't be outside with a canister that has been exposed so prolonged that it may not be giving you adequate amount of protection at that point. So, like I said, depending on, and that's what's funny, is it's not just the virus itself, it's weather depicted as well. So you may plan for, hey, I got two or three masks. I got two or three canisters for my mask. That should last me, let's say almost 2 weeks, depending on the experts. And then you have a week straight of rainstorms. Those two or three canisters now don't last you 4 days. Well, I'm not standing this post for 2 weeks. and they're not bringing me any spares. No one's answering the radio besides my guys around me, and we don't have any spare canisters. We're not staying here. That post will get abandoned, and it should be. You should only be asked to do your job as long as you have the proper PPE, the proper protective equipment to do your job. Because there's going to end up being that outreach for civilians. Hey, if you want to come help us with this hazmat, these are the suits that we can give you. And more than likely, they're going to be the worthless $10 paper Tyvek suits that is basically just an extra layer of garments. And then they'll give you the, you know, the N95 mask and then a pair of science experiment goggles and say, go forth and conquer. And that PPE is not adequate for this virus. Now, I work with a lot of guys in hazmat. A lot of my good friends are hazmat techs. A lot of my good friends who are hazmat techs are plugged in with CDC or with WHO. And that's what they're saying. Wear your gas mask and watch the weather. Now, a lot of these guys have PAPR systems, which is a self-enclosed air filter that's run off of a battery. And so you can change the canisters right there. And it'll last for hours or days. Just depends on your battery power. And typically, that's either going to be in a mask or a full containment suit itself. And those are the guys who what we call go in the hot zones. Typically, someone like me, I carry a gun to protect the guy who's going to go further than I can because he has a higher level of PPE, like a grade A, and I'll be in a C or a B, and he'll go further than I can. So it's the same way we treat a nuclear radiation attack, or excuse me, a thermonuclear attack. My apologies. You know, you're going to have your hot zone, and you have your warm zone, and then you're going to have your cold zone. In my mind, you would cordon off a city or an area the same way. You're going to have your hot zone, which is the highest quantity of infected people, which could be a hospital district, a school district, God forbid, a school district, or, you know, this one suburban area or this one apartment complex. And then we're going to step it out to a mile, maybe two, and that's the warm zone. Now we don't let anyone in and out of the warm zone. We can't exactly control all of the movement in the hot zone, but we can control the warm zone to the cold zone. The cold zone is typically where you're going to have your incident command posts. That's where you're going to have your spare first responders that'll be tag teaming in and out with guys for breaks. And that's where you also have the news media. So if there is a martial law, I can't tell you the particulars because it's going to depend on what city, first off. It's going to depend on the city. It's going to depend on the demographic. It's going to depend on, you know, how bad the virus has spread in that area. But basically, in my mind, I'm pretty sure that's the way it's going to be handled. Your hot zone, warm zone, cold zone.
I've also been told, and this is why I have you on to ask you this, that if they can deploy and they have the manpower, they would like to do concentric zones. In other words, you have an inner perimeter designed to contain movement, an outer perimeter, and then a far further out perimeter. Multi-layered perimeters, they called concentric zones. Does that fit with anything that you're aware of as far as containment goes and lack and preventing mobility?
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be about the same thing as what I'm saying.
Okay, that's what I think.
Yeah, the other thing is your main avenues of approach into a city or into an area will be shut down. Last time I had to do something like this, you know, we stood on a VCP and hey, if it was a suburb, last to see your driver's license, what house number do you belong to? What street are you on? You know, just making sure if you're actually from that area or if you're, you know, a person that's not coming there to loot something. Does that make sense?
Yes, perfect. Perfect sense. So yeah, I went through something when I was a little kid. It was called the South Platte Flood in Denver, and we were in a southern suburb, and we had to leave our homes, although we weren't affected. The floodwaters didn't get within about, oh, maybe 100 yards of us, of our homes, but we had to leave. And when we came to go back in, they had the state patrol there, and they did just exactly what you were saying. Now, this is back in the 60s. And they were, they made my dad show his ID, and he flashed his Naval Intelligence ID, and it did carry a little weight, and we were able to go. But they were making sure that you were living in the area, or they were turning you back. And you couldn't be Uncle Joe coming to stay with your nephew. You had to actually prove you lived there. So yeah, I have seen that. And will they shoot looters on site when they see looting going on? Will they actually apply deadly force without question?
That's a very extreme scenario. And that wouldn't even really apply during Katrina. The problem you had was you know, in Katrina, here's a perfect example, Dave. You actually had a prison break. You know, and prisoners actually were able to get guns. Cool. Helicopters were getting shot at. Hell, even NOPD, New Orleans PD, were looting themselves. So, that's what I'm saying, the dynamics of this type of situation, the reason why this didn't happen in China is because I honestly think the population fears the government so much that they didn't dare do anything like that. But that can only last. You can only hold the grounds of fear for as long as you can apply it. And you can only apply it if you have something that the public needs. So if I'm setting up my aid and litter stations, my Red Cross stations, missing person stations, then I set up my areas for food and water and shelter. As long as the government can control that area, they can control you. So as long as you're in those facilities, you have to abide by the facility rules and regulations. But once you, and I experienced this, once you get to where you can't control the distribution areas, or water and food, the populace will take care of itself.
That's, yeah, that's what they're afraid of. And I've heard that they'll just quarantine those areas and let people go at it with no intervention.
Well, I'm not going to say that that has happened, but that has happened. You know, there's only so many law enforcement officers, and I remember with the Baltimore riots, it started getting so bad that Leos were having to be paired up with the fire department to provide overwatch security for them, because the looters and the people rioting were being so brazen that they're actually attacking, firemen. And a friend of mine who is actually a lieutenant of one of the ladders there in Baltimore, they were putting down a fire that happened on a retirement facility. These people set a retirement home on fire, Dave, for no reason. They just had the ability to go and do it, and they did it. And so the fire engines show up. Lieutenant gets out. I'll leave his name out. And he starts getting his guys up there to quell a fire, and three thugs come up with freaking like little hatchets or machetes or something, and they cut the hose. And those are thick hoses. And they actually were able to damage one of the hose so it couldn't keep the proper PSI to throw water at this building. And they were getting into fist fights with people to try and keep them back. I mean, it was pandemonium. And like I said, that was over a false pretense. So imagine whenever it's something real, you know, and the biological thing, it's, you have to look at it in a completely different point of view. It's along the same lines as the EMP, because all the first responders, they don't want to get it either. They want to make sure that they're taking care of people and that they're helping people as much as they can, but eventually you got to take care of your family as well. So those services will only last so long. I dare give it a week, stretching at a week and a half to 2 weeks, and you're not going to see law enforcement. They'll have to be augmented by outside agencies or by military. And if it gets that bad and martial law does get declared, it'll probably be a dawn of dusk, 6 to 6. If you're out past 6 p.m., you will be arrested. Well, I mean, you know, eventually you're only going to have enough room in a jail or a magistrate to put people. And it may already be full. Where do you put them?
The malls and the stadiums.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the things I have been told in the past that they could actually confine people to their homes. You don't come out. And I've also been told that medical personnel can be conscripted into service in an impromptu fashion. They can walk into, say, a hospital wing and say, okay, you're all now employees of the federal government. You're under this guy's control. Is there truth to that?
Maybe. It's not something that I'm very familiar with. I mean, people can get deputized by the sheriff's department. But when it comes to the medical responders, I'm not too sure. I would go ahead and just say, sure, it's a possibility.
Wow, that's amazing.
But one thing is for sure is, let's say this epidemic actually does hit a city and it goes on for longer than 2 weeks, the Walmart's probably going to be completely taken over, along with any other place that has large amounts of food and water. And the government will take it. You know, that's why, you know, that's why we press so much to make sure you have your food, your water, your Band-Aids, your medical. You know, it's hard as hell for people to even get more than 2 months worth of medication at this point. It's so ridiculous because no one in America is trusted anymore by the government. So, you know, people like my dad, who has to have these really expensive type of medication for his heart, he's only given it a month's worth. Well, if it goes on more than a month and you can't travel, what starts to happen? You're going to start getting a lot of 911 calls. And, you know, eventually you're not going to be able to pass out enough medication. You're not going to be able to have enough services to render to people, and you're just going to have to take one area, like let's say the Superdome, and say, okay, this is our FEMA controlled center. This is where we're going to have all of our assets and resources relocated, and this will be the main distribution hub. This is where people will come in. They'll sign up for the all the stuff that they need help for, and or try to get help for. But even then, it's chaotic. And I've been in these situations. It does get chaotic. Because you're going to have that one idiot who shows up and ruins it for everybody. The one idiot who shows up with, you know, his gun on him. I'm not anti-gun or anything like that, but you're going to have that one guy who's going to show up swinging a machete, which is what happened to us one time, and scaring a bunch of people, and now law enforcement has to go and deal with that. And it only takes one guy to act like an idiot for there soon to be two people, then three people, then four people, and the whole situation becomes chaotic, and you got to lock down that area.
Hmm.
It can go bad. It can go bad quick.
Yeah, I'd say so. The walking off the job thing, though, didn't that happen in Katrina, like on the third and fourth day?
Yeah. Well, I had a bunch of friends of mine who were there for that. Luckily, I think I was still in the military when that was going on. the issue with Katrina was that people were, first responders were running out of gas. You know, the hotels that they were put up in were 100 miles or more away at times. And, you know, driving an SUV or an Impala or Crown Vic or a Tahoe into the affected area every day, back and forth, and gas stations are running out of gas. Places that had food are now running out of food. Shops are closing down. So the ability for first responders to even get those resources started to become real hard. And a lot of my guys were actually having to sleep out of their cars, taking shifts to patrol areas. And we're running out of gas. You know, Katrina is one of those things that we sit back and we study, because everything bad that could have happened happened at Katrina. And it was, Katrina was almost that worst case scenario for natural disasters. It was almost that complete worst case scenario, because the floodwaters landlocked parts of New Orleans really bad. And, you know, there were areas where if you didn't have a jacked up truck, or if you didn't have a John boat to get across the water as a first responder, you weren't getting across. So then you had to backtrack miles and miles and miles and miles and miles, and you got people coming from all states coming to this one area, and they may have never have even been to Louisiana, and they don't even know how to get exactly to where they're going, and now they're landlocked by floodwaters. So now they're stuck in an area. That means any added support that you had called upon that was coming isn't coming enough. You know, they're not coming anymore. They're across the water waiting on you. Well, if there's roadblocks set up in every single place, that's going to slow down a lot of time for first responders even to get there.
There's going to be a lot of unserviced areas. There's no question, because the manpower is not going to exist. What would your advice be to the average person listening now, knowing that as hard as government agents might try, and as well conceived as the plans may be, that a lot of people aren't going to be able to get serviced? What would you tell people right now about, in lieu of what's coming or what's anticipated, what would you say?
Well, don't fail to plan. That would be the starting point. You know, make sure you always have your food, your water, extra gas. I always stress to people to have enough gas tanks at your house to be able to fill up your vehicle twice. That may be hard for some people, but if the power goes out and you can't charge your phone anymore, you can charge your phone in your car. If it's the winter and the power goes out, you can at least sleep in your car with the heater on. That's not, you know, adequate all the time, but that is one thing you can do. Or if you need to get out, and you do have a truck, you can at least throw all that gas in the back, and you can go as long as you can to get out of that affected area before it's cordoned off. Because once an area is cordoned off, that's it. You're staying. You're staying until it's lifted. And it's going to be, I'm sorry, these are orders. This is what we're told to do. You can't get out of the area. Then, well, the hell with that. I'm an American. I'm getting out. No, you're not. Because if you push law enforcement at that point, they're going to have to do what they know how to do with their job skills. So I don't stress anyone challenging law enforcement during that point in time. And I'm sure I'm going to get a bunch of funny comments on that. But for your safety, you know, go with what first responders are telling you. First responders are not showing up to an affected area to hurt anybody. You know, for the most part, first responders are showing up going, oh, well, what the hell do we do besides just sit here? Because we're always doing the what-if game. What if this happens? What if that happens? But, you know, have food for at least 2 weeks. What I tell a lot of people, if you can't afford it, go to the Dollar General, get $100 worth of canned food. You know, try to have at least 2,000 calories a day worth of food, which if you have rice, ramen noodles, you know, the bumblebee chicken, the tuna packets, hot dogs, whatever it is that you need for food, have at least 2 weeks worth of it. And to go with that, have at least 2 weeks worth of water. For every meal that you have, you need to have a bottle of water. If you have to prepare that meal by boiling water, well, now you got to consider how much extra water you need just to prepare the food. It's also good to have a water filtration system. When these type of major events happen, I would tell people to immediately go to one of your bathrooms and fill up a bathtub full of water. Now you have at least, you know, 50 gallons worth of water, depending on your bathtub. So the water part can then kind of be taken care of right there, but you still want a way to purify that drinking water. So have food, have water, make sure you have medications. People are going to mill about. They're not going to stay in their homes. I don't care if I'm driving down the road and I'm on my PA system, stay inside your home, you know, by orders of the governor or by orders of the government, from this time, stay in your homes, the government's here, we're here to help you, whatever. People are still going to get out. Neighbors are still going to talk. People still got to go walk their dogs, and kids still got to go outside and play. So you can already bet people will not stay in their homes, which that means the virus will still spread one way or the other. And
that's what I'm getting here through the course of our conversation. I'm hearing the government has pretty good plans. It's been rehearsed. People are trained. But this problem with the coronavirus could be bigger than our capabilities to meet the challenge, both from equipment and manpower.
Very much so. Very much so. If we have longer time, I would go further into it. But I would say have food, water, have a way to not only barricade your own home in case you need to do that, but defend your own home, because looting will end up getting bad. People will take the opportunity to commit violent crimes against anyone who's not expecting of it. You're going to have those guys who scouted out areas before, who knows, you know, this guy's always out of town on the weekend. This is where the old folks live. This is where a single mom and her kids live. That's places we can hit. We can get any type of food or water or whatever cash or valuables they have. So those soft targets in a lot of areas have already been canvassed. They've already been scouted out by a lot of criminals. They're just not acted upon them regularly. Give them the proper situations, and they will be acted upon. So have the ability also, you know, to have flashlights at night to look around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you have a fireplace, make sure you got extra wood so that you can burn. I would say be prepared just like you would any type of survival situation. It's not going to change. Just understand that what are you surviving for? If it's an EMP, it's everything. Critical infrastructure down, it's, you know, the ability that now we don't have power. So the vehicles can still move. Hopefully in the EMP situation, the vehicles can still move. But, you know, make sure you have your extra gas for your vehicles. If you know you need to go to the store, do not hesitate. Go to the store and get added supplies. But trust me, I've been there when people waited too long and there's nothing left and people are fighting over a few articles of clothing or a few articles of food, and it gets bad because people get desperate.
And getting home with your supplies can be an adventure, as we saw in Venezuela when resources went short.
One thing I always tell a lot of the new guys who come is never underestimate the depravity of man. People will always surprise you at what distance they're willing to go for their own survival. What distance are you willing to go to ensure your own survival or that of your family? You know, that's why I stress that if you live in a suburb or if you live in a rural area, get to know your neighbors. Know which ones are good and reliable and which ones are a little shady to stay away from. Keep your eyes on. Form those networking communities. Hey, guys, look, I hate to sound like the conspiracy theorist or the paranoid guy, but if this situation happens, let's have a rallying point. Let's have the ability to set up a community watch, you know, a couple of us roving around the area in a four-wheeler or golf cart or pickup truck or whatever, and do your own community policing. It's something I've told you before, and I tell everybody, you are your own first responder. The police are the second responder. Fire and EMS are the third responder. They love hearing that. But you, who are going to be the victim of the situation, it is up to you to make sure you are ready and you are prepared. And if you're not, reach out to people around you. You may have people who already have this situation completely scouted out. They have it, I wouldn't say under control, but they're ready and they're prepared for it, and they may be willing to help you. We survive by numbers. During any type of infectious agent like this coronavirus, which is just such a particular virus because of how it spread, you may want to be able to say, hey, guys, let's make sure we all have gas masks, or at the least case, N95 masks or some sort of a cover that goes over our face, like a welder's or not a welder's helmet, but a face shield of some kind.
Sure.
You know, get all your proper information. Reach out. Maybe your community or your own local government has some sort of program where they can even help you out with that. There are some chances that, you know, some communities are actually prepared, but I'm just.
I wouldn't bet my life on it. Wrecker, we're just about out of time here, and I want to thank you. I think what you did was tell people, basically, the government's going to try, but they don't have all the answers. And like you said, you're your own first responder, and I think that's the best advice we heard here as far as that, taking an impetus to be personally prepared. I want to thank you for coming on the Common Sense Show, and we're going to come back to you for updates as the situation warrants. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Dave.
Take care, everybody. We'll see you back here again next time.